Meeting will come to order for the Capital Investment Committee for March 20th, 2007. And we do have a quorum. So would anyone like to approve the minutes? Representative Carlson moves the minutes for March 19th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We're going to be doing many amendments here today, members, and then we will talk, we will work on the Omnibus Capital Investment Bill. The first amendment that we have before us is the H0886A5, and it's a technical amendment. And
Madam Chair, I will move the bill.
Move the bill.
Representative Hausman moves the bill to get the bill before us.
Madam Chair, yes, House File 886 as amended yesterday, and just hopefully a few amendments today. And we told members we thought we might be finished in 15 minutes, so we'll see
Great.
How that goes. Madam Chair, I would move the A5 amendment, and that is a technical correction amendment that I will have Deb Dyson explain.
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the A5 amendment, there's just a few things included in it. Lines 1.3, 1.4, and then 113 and 1.14 relate to adding $32,000 to the bond sale expenses because we did not include that amount, which is related to the trunk highway bonds issuance, so we need to just increase the bond sale expense dollar amount, and that's what those lines do. On the amendment on line 1.5, this is in the Stillwater Flood Control Appropriation under DNR, and it's adding a reference to the Flood Hazard Mitigation Statute. On 1.6 to 1.7, this is adding the sentence to the Kennesaw Mine Project that the appropriation does not require a local match. And then on 1.8 down to 1.11, those are changes to the flood hazard mitigation rider for Roseau and Browns Valley. For the Roseau project on 1.8 to 1.9, it's just adding in the eligible expenses for land acquisition, engineering, design, and construction, taking out on line 10 the reference to the East Diversion project, and then on 1.11, on line 11, there's a page and line correction. It should say page 7, line 34. There is no line 35, so it's a typo. I apologize for that. But it's adding Browns Valley to the provision that allows that to the extent a project exceeds 2% of the median household income times the number of households in the municipality that the appropriation is also for the local share. So it's correcting that. It was left off. And then on line 1.12, the dollar amount correction, that's the administrative expenses for the RIM implementation. And it's supposed to be 15%, and so it had to be brought down to match the $8 million appropriation for RIM. And that's the amendment.
Very good. Are there any questions to that amendment? Representative Solberg.
I'm sure I'm sorry. I'm a little bit late.
Yes, that's right. There's lots of papers to shuffle here, so.
Just one other correction. I thought on 6.22, and maybe you've included that, that it also has to be to the Western Mine. I thought it had to go through the DNR to the Western Mine. Have we included that amendment?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg. The entire section is an appropriation to the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and so we don't need to add that.
Thank you.
Any further questions to the amendment in question? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The next amendment that we have before us is an amendment. Representative Dean, maybe you'd like to move your amendment. It's H0886A3.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
And then, Representative Dean, would you like to explain that amendment to us? Did you want to explain it?
Madam Chair, members, this refers to a very late proposal that we heard last week on Friday that relates to the Zephyr train line in Stillwater. And what this is it's a, if you've ever ridden on the train, it's a dinner train that connects downtown Stillwater and the Gateway Trail. The train line is currently for sale, and talks have been underway between the owner of this line and the Department of Natural Resources for a trail connection. The Gateway Trail is currently the most heavily used trail in the state, and this would be very likely the most heavily used connection of that trail. The DNR is very interested in this property, and they are negotiating. However, we would like to put this in next year's bonding bill, but we would not like to lose this over the course of the next year. What this does is it takes $250,000 to appropriate towards the purchase of that to tie this property up for the next year so that we can we don't let this piece of property go. It's approximately 5 miles in length. It travels along the Browns Creek Nature Center, which is a trout stream in the north hill of Stillwater that connects downtown. It's a very, very admirable project, and it's one that we don't want to lose for lack of time this year. And it's because of the urgency of the owner that we want to try to put some money in this to tie it up for the next year.
Thank you, Representative Dean. And I understand because I've watched that trail both from this dinner train and from the golf course. So, and Representative Hausman, any comments?
And Madam Chair, I support that amendment. And it is being taken from the non-commercial television line. I suggested that. That is not a surprise to that group of people. They were alerted to that in advance.
Very good. Any further questions on the 886A3 amendment from members? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The next amendment that we have before us is the A7 amendment, and to speak to that will be Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, I'll move that A7 amendment. This is a little bit like the Greenleaf language that we have in the bill. This was requested by Representative Clark. You may recall, those of you who were on the committee last year, that they received some dollars, and they just want to assure that they stay on a steady course for a plan for that. And, of course, we would be interested in that as well. So I would move the A7 amendment.
Any questions from committee members on the A7 amendment? Representative Solberg.
I noticed there's a correction of the poor cost out as part of your amendment.
Thank you, Representative Solberg. Yes, deleting the word four on 1-9.
Any further questions on the amendment? If not, Representative Hausman renews her motion for the A7 amendment with the further amendment taking out the word four on line 1.9. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. The next amendment before us is the A4 amendment, and Representative Hausman to that amendment.
Madam Chair, I will move the A4. This was requested by those who have an interest in both the Central Corridor and Union Depot, and just makes clear that the lines meet at that point, and that becomes the terminus as all those lines meet.
Any questions for Representative Hausman on that on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The last amendment we have here is the A8 amendment to Representative Hausman.
And Madam Chair, I will move this. I'm offering this on behalf of others who will speak to it. Not quite as simple as the others, and as I understand it, there's ongoing conversation on this issue between the House and Senate, and I'm certain the Governor's office as well, and we expect that conversation would continue through the course of the next month or so, and I would just say that for the record, that I know those conversations across the House, Senate, and Governor's office will continue.
And it appears, Representative Hausman, that we have some testimony coming down.
Mr. John Herman will discuss this amendment.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Herman. I'm a partner at the law firm of Fagrie & Benson, and our firm represents a coalition of organizations that have been involved with the state bond finance property program in recent years, and the group has proposed these amendments to try to clarify or respond to a number of changes that have been proposed in the program recently by finance and in the view of the recipients or the acting nonprofit organizations have made the program materially more difficult to utilize. And so we've proposed these changes to try to resolve some of those questions. If I could spend a minute or two on a bit of history. The real origins of this concept of state bond finance property, I think, date back to Governor Carlson, who tried to energize a variety of public-private partnerships by having the state be a small participant with state bond proceeds in projects that then had three or four private dollar matches in order to try to generate the kind of hundreds of millions of dollars of support or generate the local community support to establish some of the fabulous institutions and expansions that we've seen in cultural, social service, and educational programs over the last decade or so. I think the first very substantial one of these projects was the Minnesota Science Museum, which received a $30 million grant as part of a roughly $125 million total development. Recent other large examples, the Children's Theater, McPhail Center for Music, the Guthrie Theater. But it's also been a program which has energized projects in smaller communities, which otherwise would have had a lot more difficulty, I think, generating the public support. The Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro of 4 or 5 years ago, the theater in Keister that dates back, I think, to the very origins of the program, the theater in downtown Hopkins that revitalized that downtown, the aquarium in Duluth, and a number of others. I would guess that the program as a whole has probably generated more than half a billion of private fundraising to go with probably 150 million of state bond financing. In the last year, in closing several of these transactions, finance proposed a number of pretty material changes in the program that raised really serious questions about the program's viability for the private donor community and the nonprofits whose facilities become the state bond finance property. And so this amendment is an attempt to try to respond to those issues and strike a more appropriate balance. Obviously, this is a program that the legislature should be crafting the basic parameters of rather than changes happening without real consultation in the administration of the program. So perhaps I could just talk about the specific changes for a moment. One issue with these projects is as they become state bond finance property and are therefore governmentally owned properties, the nonprofits then move into a situation where even though they perhaps have supplied 80% of the money from the private donor community, the facilities are leased to the nonprofit. And the state has deemed that the lease has to be for less than half the useful life. In the most recent changes, the state changed a policy which had extended a presumption for renewal to the nonprofits. And what this would do is it would provide that that presumption would continue, that as long as they're continuing to carry out the governmental program, the lease can be renewed. And the obvious issue here is if you have most of the money coming from private sources and a and no obligation whatsoever for lease renewal, even at the first cut, whether or not there's some modest presumption. You raise a real issue as to whether the nonprofit side of the fundraising will be detrimentally affected. Obviously, if the program is discontinued by the governmental unit, then you have an issue about then you would have the issue that the lease would terminate. This also would provide that if the lease does terminate, the government would be able to negotiate to sell the property to the nonprofit as a first opportunity, obviously with the repayment of the state bond investment as part of that obligatory requirement on the sale. The second section here provides that.
Would you give us the page and the line number,
sure,
please?
Sure. The first amendment that I just addressed is on page 1, and it extends from lines 114 through line 123. The second amendment actually makes a very modest change in policy, but one which we think is particularly important in terms of, again, encouraging the private donations. The current statute provides that in any sale of one of these properties, the sequence of use of the sale proceeds, number one, to pay back the state. Number two, to pay any private mortgage lender that's provided funds for the project. And then the current law provides that the balance is then divided between the state in proportion to what they put in and the private institutional support that the project had. But keep in mind, the state's already had their money paid back. So it's a bit of a double dip for the state, and it's been the subject of some controversy with the private funding community and the foundation community that's provided most of these funds. So what this does is it says, let's have a little different sequence. First, to the state, 100% of the bond proceeds. Second, to the private lenders. Third, to the private sources of funds. And then finally, fourth, split between the private and the public in proportion to their investment to the extent there's any money left over. So the state continues to be the first priority, but they just don't get their percentage interest until the original principal investment of the private fundraising community has also been repaid. In effect, it treats those private contributors as like a third position mortgagee. The next section, in many ways, I think is perhaps the most important section of the bill.
And would that be on page
that's
three?
At page 3, lines 3.16 to 3.22.
Thank you.
All of these projects, with a very few exceptions, require a material private match. So the state will say, we'll give the McPhail Center for Music $4 million, provided that it raises a minimum of $16 million of private money on a 4-to-1 match basis. In the real world of private fundraising, almost all of these campaigns rely on a material part of the money coming from multi-year pledges. In other words, somebody says, I'll give you $50,000 a year for the next 5 years, $250,000. This year, for the first time, literally since the inception of the program with the Children's Museum and the Science Museum in Minnesota, the state said, gee, we're uncomfortable with the current funding of these multi-year pledges being counted as a match. And more particularly, we're concerned about if you convert those pledges to current dollars by borrowing against the pledges from a financial institution, that financial institution would have a mortgage. In the McPhail case, it literally derailed the project for most of the summer. At the end of the summer, the state ultimately agreed that, yes, indeed, they'd recognize that for a portion of the amount, and they would agree to come in this session and try to clarify the law that those multi-year pledges and the mortgage would be okay provide in that particular case. But this change would make it prohibitively difficult, frankly, to meet the match requirement if we didn't make this change, which is to allow those multi-year pledges to be monetized and currently funded and then reflected with a mortgage on the property.
And members, I'm just going to intercede, Madam Chair, for a minute to have members note that in the bill, and this was in the governor's bill, and that language is found on page 35 and 36, that was a governor's language included in his bill that relates to that particular agreement. So it is relevant to this discussion as well.
Right. So,
Mr. Herman.
So obviously, this is, I think, critical to allow the projects that we've been doing to continue to be done with the kind of match requirements that have been imposed. It's interesting that the state has not objected to mortgages beyond the amount of the match for filling any gaps in funding, and finance has also, as I said, historically not had any problem with this structure. I think it's actually been used for every single project, beginning with that Children's Museum in downtown St. Paul. And then the final comment is on page 3, lines 3.27 to 3.32. What this would allow is something which actually was the exact structure for the Children's Theater and the Guthrie, which were funded, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. And that is that the land underlying the project is actually owned by the nonprofit, and at the conclusion of the lease, at a 50-year point, 125% of the useful life, the land and building are reunified in nonprofit ownership, and the interest of the state in the state bond finance property, because the useful life of the building has been exhausted, is terminated. And I think in some regards this may be the most controversial section of the bill with the Department of Finance, but it does provide for an orderly way to reunify the ownership in the nonprofit and to recognize that the state has gotten its full fair measure of value over the useful life plus 25% of the building, and at that point the reunified nonprofit is better suited to continue long-term operation and management of the property. I think this is particularly important in a case, for example, like the Ordway, where the state's providing a small amount of revitalization and renewal money, but you have a $100 million facility, and otherwise that $100 million facility becomes public property forever for a $10 million investment. So I believe these would make the program much more user-friendly. I don't think they jeopardize the state's real interest in ensuring the repayment of their money and the long-term provision of the public-private program that led to the appropriation. I hope the committee would be positively inclined, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Representative Halsman.
And Madam Chair, I would just add, you may recall the discussion. I think it was Representative Lanning, Representative Mahoney, and Representative Junkie who had questions and suggestions that day in committee. And I will just simply acknowledge that this is probably for this year an unfinished conversation. It will continue between the House and the Senate and the Governor's office, I would imagine, as the bill goes forward.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Are there any questions from committee members for Mr. Herman? Yes, Representative Peterson.
I guess the question I have, especially on this last Subdivision 7 on lease state bond finance property, we're opening a whole new arena with that, and I'm not sure that at the 2:45 on a Tuesday afternoon that we want to open that box.
What I recall, Madam Chair, was the day that they were presenting when I suddenly realized that because we had given the Asian Cultural Center $400,000,
right,
that even though nothing else happened and they never came back to us, that in fact the state would have claim to that. I asked that question, and the answer was yes, that is correct, that the state would have claim to that. And that is that's something of a startling understanding, and I don't know whether whether that has always been clear along the way. I would say, Representative Peterson, that you raise exactly the right question, and what I would just suggest members is the only way we can bring this suggestion to the table for conversation is if it appears somewhere, and that would be my request to the committee. If we can add it to the bill, it becomes part of the conversation as we meet the Senate in conference, and as certainly the governor has a role in that process as well.
And Mr. Herman, do you have comments on that?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, let me answer the question in two ways. One issue is, after the bonds are paid off in 20 years, how long does the reasonable state interest extend, and is it a perpetual interest where the state's involvement should continue in an infinite period of time? Ironically, the resolution of this for the 125% of useful life arose out of the state's own suggestion that they deemed ownership to be 1.25 times the useful life, and their suggestion of this exact device to resolve the issue of the children's theater, where the property is leased by the Art Institute to the children's theater, and there was an issue of how long does that lease extend and what happens at the conclusion of it. And they said, we deem that to be sufficient, 125% of the useful life. So that device was used in both the Children's Theater closing and the Guthrie Theater closing that happened, I believe, 3 or 4 years ago. The change this time is what has occasioned the proposal that we actually codify what had been the historical practice and suggest that that is a permissible device to have the property reunified at the end of that time frame. So in one sense, this proposal is to return to the status quo of what was the way these projects were structured in the last couple of bonding cycles.
Representative Hausman, any other comments regarding that?
I think we're ready to vote.
Any further questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hausman, thank you for bringing this issue forward. As you noted, when we considered a House file brought to us earlier in the session, I raised some real questions about the change in what I perceive to be a change in policy or the way the state was going to handle these projects. And it seems to me that this amendment adequately protects the state's interests and also does not serve as an impediment to public-private partnerships. I mean, we have a lot of very worthwhile projects that we want to support as a state that really requires strong participation on the part of the private sector, and I think this language enables that much better than the language we saw earlier, which I thought, frankly, was a deterrent. Now, if someone from the finance department can convince me that there's some still a hole in this, I'd like to see it or hear it. But I think, Mr. Herman, you've laid out a good case for this language, and therefore I support it.
Any further questions regarding the amendment before us? Representative Hausman, any other comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried on the A8 amendment.
And then, Madam Chair, I think we're ready for final passage.
So, Representative Hausman, we have the bill before us. Any further questions from committee members? Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, and Madam Chair. I want to go back to the subject that I raised, and I'm going to go to page 3 of the bill, line 3.1 through 3.4. And that's the appropriation for the Brooklyn Park campus of Hennepin Technical College. And again, we've had testimony, and I remember one of our colleagues in this committee even spoke to the University of Minnesota saying they wish that they would prioritize the projects within the university like MinSCU has historically done. And they always use MinSCU's priorities as the kind of the prerequisite way to do things. And I've raised that question again. This is a MinSCU project that's coming to us solo. And I think we are going to start something that would discourage MinSCU from continuing to spend so much time and energy prioritizing when the presidents of those institutions can walk in here and get a project completed outside of the normal procedure. And I think we are encouraging behavior that is inappropriate.
Representative Hausman.
And Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I just was quickly looking through my file to see whether I had the particular list, because my understanding is this does appear on their list. So we're not inventing a project. This actually appears on their list. I hate to put them on the spot. So this appears on a MinSCU HEPA list.
And the representative from MinSCU is shaking his head. Yes.
Head, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we didn't make up the project. and I think what we're saying to them is we'll just give you a little more money and we'll go a little further down the list.
Representative Peterson.
And is it an emergency?
Representative Hausman.
I don't know if I should put them on the spot, but Representative Carlson.
Yeah.
Yes, Representative Carlson.
So people understand, and on your end of town, the very same project is authorized for the Eden Prairie campus, and as you may know, they're both under one administrative umbrella, and the campuses were built at the same time by the same architect, and the original request from the campus was to deal with the HVAC needs at both the Eden Prairie and Brooklyn Park campus. And so they're the same age, the same need, the same request. For some reason, they didn't happen to move them both forward at the same time, but the need is the same.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Representative Hausman for all the work on this bill. Just a question I have in looking it over, I was wondering if there any particular reason why all the governor's requests seem to be general fund dollars.
Representative Hausman.
I confess that we have to divide them because we have 135 bonding and 130, and we knew that in the case of the DEC, the Senate has an interest in moving that as cash. We sometimes listen to a little bit to the other body, so they were, I think, somewhat arbitrary, and again, my guess is in conference committee, when we negotiate with the House and Senate and the governor, that will make the appropriate changes to what everyone believes is the correct approach.
Any other questions from committee members?
And Madam Chair, I would just note a
Representative Hausman.
This is a typo rather than we needing an amendment, I think, but on page 15 we have a period where it should be a comma, and we've just noted that.
So noted. Representative Lanning has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman, you've heard me talk about my feelings about HEPA projects, that we need to take care of the facilities that we have, and I want to thank you for carrying forward their recommendations, both from the University of Minnesota and from MinSCU. I would second Representative Peterson's concern about things getting skipped over moved on. I believe that they do a thorough job, Minsky and the university, in establishing priorities, and I would hope that we would respect those priorities all the way along and not skip over some and go down further on the list. And so I just wanted to echo that. I also want to note that we certainly understand that most, if not, I think almost all of the governor's projects are funded with general fund, one-time money, plus all of the minority projects. And, you know, that doesn't go unnoticed. And I don't think that's the best way to do this, but obviously it's the way that it's the road we're on right now. And I hope before we get to the end that we will see a different result.
Representative Hausman, any comments?
We'll be very respectful of the governor's role in the process.
Any further comments from committee members? Representative Rukavina.
Peterson and Representative Lanning, you know, I've been here not as long as some of the people in this room, but for quite some time, and I've seen many times, and I think on both Republican and Democratic control, when projects have been skipped over and funded, you know, we're the lawmakers. I got to answer to people, and in the end, we make the decisions and the laws. And sometimes, you know, I don't know if there's any less politics in bureaucratic decisions than there are in legislative decisions. So, since you're on the record saying that it is inappropriate, I'd like to be on the record saying that at times I think it's appropriate because we're the ones that have to answer to the public. And you know, I've been battling bureaucrats for years down here on a county level and everything else. And I'll tell you what, the common ordinary guy appreciates it.
Thank you for that. Any further comments from committee members?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, I can do battle with the bureaucrats as well as anybody, and I'm not afraid to do that. But I also think we need to respect the careful and thoughtful process that both Minsky and the university goes through, and I think it's real dangerous for us to start going around that and picking and choosing political favorites as far as HEPA, especially HEPA dollars.
Thank you. Are there any comments from anyone here in the audience for or against this bill as amended? Doesn't look like any questions. No further questions from the committee. A representative Hausman would renew her motion then that House File 886 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Any further comments?
And Madam Chair, I would just, I think this is our last committee hearing this year. We have had wonderful work from Pages and from our staff here, and it's been a pleasure beginning to get to know this committee. And in the interim, when we travel around the state, we'll look forward to sharing that experience and then building a consensus about the bill next year. We thank you.
I always thought at the last committee meeting we'd always have pie.
Representative Solberg doesn't get pie.
I think that's Ways and Means.
Oh, Ways and Means.
With that, I believe the meeting is adjourned.